Welcome to the Holistic Psychiatry Podcast. I'm Courtney Snyder, a physician and holistic adult and child psychiatrist. In this episode, I'll be discussing the impacts on the brain of electromagnetic fields, or EMF. I'll discuss symptoms associated with EMF exposure, how EMF appears to impact the brain and other body systems, factors that increase our vulnerability to the effects of EMF, and ways to lower that vulnerability. I do look forward to a day when lowering the exposure to electromagnetic fields will be right up there with other basic health recommendations such as getting adequate sleep and exercise, managing stress, and limiting or avoiding sugar. In the meantime, I'll try in this episode to convince you of why I think lowering EMF is a good idea. When I use the term EMF, I'm referring to the more concerning types such as radio frequencies, magnetic and electric fields, and dirty electricity. For simplicity, I'll be talking about these collectively, though much of the emerging research is on radio frequencies, so what comes off of cell phones, smart or wireless technology. As will become evident, vulnerabilities to EMF very much overlap with vulnerabilities to brain conditions and chronic complex illness. So to start, symptoms associated with EMF exposure: insomnia, memory problems, irritability, depression, personality changes, inattention, fatigue, disorientation, and confusion. But also headache, ringing in ears, dizziness, numbness, tingling, skin changes such as stinging or burning sensations, redness, itching, or rosacea, and heart palpitations, as well as swelling of the hands and feet, and this relates to dilation of veins. So how many people are impacted by EMF? So the range as far as electromagnetic sensitivity is quite large. Up from 5 to 35% of the population may be adversely affected by EMF. Prior to 5G, which has been a big step up in exposure, the U.S. estimate suggested that 30% of the population had mild sensitivity, 5% moderate, and 0.65% had high sensitivity. In Europe, it was estimated that 5 to 10% of people had electromagnetic sensitivity. Despite the seeming lack of public awareness, especially here in the U.S., there is a great deal of research into the biologic impacts on plants, animals, and humans. As with any toxin or toxicant, research is made difficult by the varying amounts and duration of EMF exposures and varying combinations of exposures to the different types of EMF. While you can put mice in a controlled environment and expose them, for example, to radio frequencies, and then measure certain outcomes such as changes in brain structure or even tumor growth, that is more difficult to do in humans. Add to these challenges the ongoing research promoted by cell phone companies that, not surprisingly, counters what is being otherwise learned. Some of the human studies have focused on those who are electromagnetically hypersensitive or have EHS, which shouldn't minimize what can be learned. Just as with any toxin or toxicant, there will be the canaries in the coal mine who will first feel the impacts. Because a trigger for EHS or electromagnetic hypersensitivity is high exposure, and because EMF is increasing rapidly in our environments, EHS is expected to increase. So what are the 10 ways EMF appears to impact the brain? Number one, oxidative stress and neurotoxicity. Oxidative stress is when our antioxidant systems are overwhelmed by free radicals, resulting in the depletion of our protections against cellular damage, so a depletion of our antioxidants. There are a number of biologic markers that have been used to measure oxidative stress from radio frequencies. One example is a decrease in glutathione levels. Glutathione is one of, if not the most important antioxidant in the body. EMF has been shown to damage DNA, cell membranes, and mitochondria, the energy sources in our cells. Cell death, in this case brain cell death, can lead to damaged brain tissue and thus structural changes in the brain. Aside from damaging nerve cells, radio frequencies have been shown to damage sperm, ovarian cells, cardiac cells, blood cells, and immune cells. For example, high exposure has been associated with lower sperm counts, decreased sperm motility, and a change in sperm structure. Number two, disruption of our innate electricity. We are electric beings. We have electrical impulses that travel through nerve tissue that make our brains work, help our muscles contract, and cause our heart to beat. This is why pacemakers exist, why when someone's heart stops beating, an electrical device is used to reactivate their heartbeat, and why the measurement of electrical activity in the brain is used to determine how likely someone will awaken from a coma. Our health depends on the proper functioning of this innate electricity. Electrical impulses travel down our nerve cells by way of voltage-dependent calcium channels. The opening and closing of these channels, which is impacted by voltage or the electrical activity within our body, creates a wave that travels down the nerve cell as an electric impulse. The interference in this process by EMF is what can create the symptoms that I described earlier. Number three, immune dysregulation. Not unlike mold toxicity, EMF appears to both decrease an effective immune response and also add to an exaggerated immune response. EMF exposure has been associated with decreased white cell counts, but also mast cell activation and histamine release. Facial skin samples of people with EHS, or electromagnetic hypersensitivity, shows a profound increase in mast cells. Other studies have found mast cells to be in greater density and larger in size in those with EHS. Is this because those with a susceptibility to mast cell activation are just more reactive to EMF? Or is it that the EMF is causing these impacts, or both? Either one is an argument for lowering exposure, since mast and microglial activation are very common in psychiatric conditions. Number four, autonomic dysfunction. This automatic aspect of our nervous system operates outside of our conscious awareness. It is what has us in fight, flight, shutdown, or a rest and digest state. We can feel threatened from the outside. This could be a person we don't trust, or from the inside by a biotoxin or a microbial overgrowth. EMF similarly appears to put us into a fight or irritability, flight, which can be anxiety, or shutdown, emotional numbing or depersonalization, without our knowing why. Ways to measure the impacts of EMF on the autonomic nervous system include blood pressure, heart rate, and heart rate variability in the presence and absence of EMF. These are just a few biomarkers that are used by some to diagnose electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Number five, hormonal impacts. Cortisol levels have been shown to increase in the presence of EMF. Again, the body appears to be experiencing EMF as a threat. Salivary cortisol levels, with and without EMF present, have been used as another biomarker for diagnosing electromagnetic hypersensitivity. These biomarkers are not necessary to recognize EHS. If someone suspects that they may have EHS, they can lower their exposure and notice if there is a change in symptoms when they return to the exposure. EMF can lower melatonin, which is a hormone produced by the brain. Both high cortisol and low melatonin can contribute to significant sleep issues. This is why turning off devices and Wi-Fi at night and creating that sleep sanctuary I talked about in the last episode can be so impactful. Interestingly, too, melatonin has protective benefits against EMF exposure. Testosterone can also be decreased. Number six, disruption of the microbiome. Just as our body has a threat response, as I've described, microbes do too. When microbes feel threatened, they multiply, make more toxins, and this makes them more virulent. When they feel threatened, they can also change forms, and in doing so, for example, bacteria can become more resistant to antibiotics. Each of these microbial defenses have been shown to be used by gut bacteria in the presence of EMF. Yeast has been shown to use radio frequencies as an energy source for growth, and mold has been shown to make more toxins in the presence of EMF. This is one reason why lowering EMF can be an important part of treatment for mold and yeast, from my perspective. I'll mention another coming up shortly. Number 7, limbic dysfunction. The limbic system is the part of our brain involved in memory through the hippocampus, emotion, and our stress response. A decrease in cells in the hippocampus has been linked to high EMF exposure. Separately, because the limbic system is involved in a recognition and alerting the body to a threat, it is expected that it would be involved in our physiologic response to EMF, along with the autonomic nervous system. Research suggests that subcortical structures, so those structures deeper within our brain, so that would include the limbic system, are impacted by EMF. For example, when they gave unilateral EMF exposure, as would be the case with a cell phone to one side of the head, there were EEG changes, sleep, glucose, changes in glucose metabolism, and changes in cerebral blood flow bilaterally. And this, again, would argue that the impacts are affecting the deeper cortical structures, even when the exposure is coming from one side of the head. Clinically, we also find that limbic system retraining, which is used for mast cell activation, multiple chemical sensitivity, mold toxicity, and other chronic complex illness from biotoxins such as Lyme and co-infections, we find that these limbic system retraining programs are also very helpful with electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Number 8, the blood-brain barrier. So this is the barrier that exists between the vascular system that feeds into our brain and the brain tissue. So it is a barrier that would essentially keep things out of the brain that are in the bloodstream. But multiple studies have shown increased permeability of the blood-brain barrier with exposure to radio frequencies. So this can mean a greater likelihood of toxins and potentially microbes getting into the brain. Separately, EMF has been shown to decrease blood flow to the brain. Number 9, demyelination. Myelin is the protective covering on nerve cells that allows impulses to travel more rapidly. Impacts on myelin can mean disruption of neuronal impulses along nerve cells. There is evidence that EMF can impact myelin and play a role in what is called demyelination. Number 10, elevated blood sugar. This has been looked at most closely with dirty electricity. Blood sugar levels were found to respond directly to the amount of dirty electricity exposure. This is particularly relevant for those who are having difficulty moving past candida and mold, which can thrive when there's high blood sugar, and which commonly contribute to brain symptoms. So who is most susceptible to these impacts? And I'll start with children. Because of their thinner skulls, their smaller size, and because their brains have a higher water content, they do absorb more EMF. Relative to adults, they will have longer exposures over time, and they are still developing. Also susceptible would be those who are in high exposure settings, including schools, hospitals, and high-tech workplaces. Pregnant women and their developing babies also are vulnerable. And those who've had electrical trauma, so multiple shocks, anyone who's been struck by lightning, or who's had an especially high EMF exposure, those who've had chemical trauma or biologic trauma, and so this could be something like mold toxicity, a high burden of parasites, or Lyme or other co-infections, or physical trauma to the head, neck, and spinal cord. People with autoimmune conditions can be susceptible, And there are specific variants that appear to raise someone's susceptibility, and these very much relate to one's ability to detoxify. So the variants include MTHFR, GSTM1, which relates to glutathione, GSTT1, which also relates to glutathione, SOD2, which relates to an important antioxidant, and COMT, which I've talked about previously, and which is very relevant to brain conditions. And how can we lower our susceptibility? First, we can lower our exposure. This is the most important part of treatment for electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Reactivity does tend to decrease over time, and often people then become more EMF sensible. And this is where they continue to have a recognition of the presence of EMF without having severe symptoms. Most people, myself included, would still opt to keep their exposure relatively low, even if they're past the high sensitivity state. We can get outside and get fresh air. We can walk barefoot on the earth for grounding. We can all lower our stress response. And for those that need more support here, such as those who have had high immune reactivity, we can do things like accessing the vagus nerve and doing limbic system retraining. For me personally, deep breathing practices that are part of my daily routine really do tend to lower my sensitivity to EMF. We can address toxins. So most people that I see that have electromagnetic hypersensitivity have mold toxicity. And so often with addressing that and with mast cells thus calming down, the electromagnetic sensitivity does lessen. But again, lowering exposure is a big part of the treatment. We can support our foundation with good hydration, sleep, and exercise. There are nutrients that can be optimized, and key players seem to be vitamin C, E, and selenium, which are used in most Walsh nutrient protocols, but also NAC and glutathione, ALA, so these would all be important for antioxidant support, but also CoQ10 and magnesium is particularly important. That doesn't mean that I would necessarily put everyone with electromagnetic hypersensitivity on all of these nutrients, but these are the ones that you'll read about. I find lowering mast cell activation helpful, and for most people that I'm seeing would have good antioxidant support in place anyway. And then we can support enzymes that seem to be impacted by genetic variants where necessary. So for example, if someone has MTHFR and they seem to be undermethylated, or they have a COMT variant and then they have symptoms fitting with that, then I would want to use targeted nutrients to support those enzymes. As you can see, EMF intersects with all the root causes I frequently write about here: methylation, other forms of toxicity, oxidative stress, the immune system, the gut microbiome, the endocrine system, and the autonomic nervous system. I hope I've made a case for lowering exposure, and hope the resources provided in the last episode can help you do that. I look forward to connecting with you in a future episode or newsletter. And until then, take care. Bye-bye.